Greenside, the IGA podcast.
Also, Mike McCoy, the 2013 U.S.
Zach Johnson, now a two-time major champion after becoming the winner of the 144th Open Championship.
All right, welcome to Greenside, the IGA podcast. Clint Brown here with you. Have Dr. Adam Tomes, assistant professor at Iowa State University in the Department of Horticulture. Adam, how are you this morning?
I'm great, Clint. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. If I have my notes right here, you attended Iowa State, got your bachelor's degree, and then went down to Rocky Top and got your master's and doctorate at the University of Tennessee. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, good deal. Why don't we just start off? How did you kind of get interested and get started in kind of the profession you're in now?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I came to Iowa State. I knew that I wanted to do something outside, and I kind of wanted to do something agriculture related. Didn't have farmland or anything like that, so I kind of picked a career that was urban farming, and started out at Iowa State working on the athletic department side, the grounds crew. And then once I was at Tennessee, I kind of started working on some of the projects more golf related there, and really enjoyed that part of it as well.
Tell us about kind of your master's and doctorate program. What did that entail, I guess? Because I'm not familiar with kind of how that works on your side of things.
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of different from your undergraduate education. You have a project that you typically focus on, and then you take classes as well.
Okay.
At the same time. And so that kind of makes some unique time management skills. But my PhD project was actually testing some new Bermuda, or my master's project, sorry, was testing new Bermuda grasses for use in the transition zone. And that's kind of a term we use for Tennessee, Missouri, areas like that, where the joke is you can grow all grasses equally poorly. So it's, you know, summers are too hot for our cool season grasses like we typically grow up here. And the winters are too cold for the Bermuda grasses and zoysias. They really struggle in those zones. And so we were testing some grasses that were supposed to be more cold tolerant. And so that was kind of a fun project to kind of do that and see how that had come. That was my master's project. My PhD project, I actually did a lot of work on athletic field safety. And so I was comparing synthetic turf and natural grass, and how those two performed with athlete injury and interactions. And so that was a fun project as well.
Adam, I wanted to mention you've obviously been an awesome friend of the IGA and also the golf course superintendent world here in Iowa. We just wrapped up we were a vendor there at the Iowa Turf Grass Conference. A lot of all turf professionals are there. Do you want to kind of talk about that and kind of what happens at that conference? Because I think there's a lot of people that hear about it, but maybe don't really understand on all the great stuff that's going on.
Yeah, it's a three-day event that typically happens, obviously, when the superintendents have time to attend continuing education. And so normally that's in February. Some years we have it in January, but it's a great opportunity to kind of sit down and learn about, you know, new products that are coming online. So whether it be a new fertilizer or new fungicide for diseases, weed control, things like that. And that's where superintendents can really learn about the newest products out there, the newest management techniques from others in the industry, as well as professionals like myself on the research side. There's also a massive trade show that, is a great opportunity. And I would encourage anyone that's interested in golf to attend this event, just to learn about the operations side of the management of the turf grass. It's a chance to see the new mowers, as well as, what it takes for fertilizers, things like that, and make sure that, you know, your superintendent at your local course is attending this. That way they can stay up to date on the latest information that's out there.
Adam, I always enjoy that show is, you know, the superintendents kind of get together and they're kind of bouncing ideas off of each other. And, you know, hey, this is working for me. This, you know, this isn't working. Hey, I'm dealing with this. Can you kind of talk about just that good camaraderie that happens as well?
Yeah, it's you know, really fun to see the networking that those guys can do. And, you know, it's neat to see guys that, hey, I'm in the northwest corner of the state. And I'm going to chat with somebody in the Des Moines area and they visit about, you know, I had this disease or I don't have this disease pressure. Or I handled, you know, preventing diseases with this different product. And so that's really fun to see. And it's also fun to see the different budgets in the state, you know, as they visit. And so, you know, I saw small 9-hole course superintendents that are new to the industry talking to, you know, the 18 hole courses and some of the larger budgets. And they're, it's such a great opportunity for those guys to bounce ideas off of each other and kind of, you know, make tweaks to their own programs for the upcoming year. And so that's always fun. And then when I go out in the summer and visit the different superintendents, you know, we can kind of talk and they say, you know, I picked up this idea at the conference visiting with a superintendent and now I've implemented it and here's the success I've had. And that's, it's fun to see that come full circle.
You know, another thing that I enjoy, Adam, and I bet you'll agree, it's kind of fun to talk with some of those guys that are either have been in the industry for quite a while or maybe have retired. I'm, you know, I'm thinking of a Doug Snook or a John Austin that you can, well, you know, I used to do it this way and, you know, now they got, you know, they got a machine that does that for me.
Yeah, that's always super fun to hear. You know, one of the things that I think we don't appreciate as much is they talk about how they used to have to come in and turn on the watering systems at night.
Yep.
And now we can do it from our cell phones. And so that's always fun to hear how different things were for them and how much more maybe labor intensive it is versus today where we've got technology that can kind of take that place.
Adam, and maybe this is kind of a loaded question, but is there something, is there a kind of a hot topic, maybe one or two that's out there, you know, with obviously every facility that a superintendent is at is a little bit different, but are there a few things maybe that are, you know, everybody's trying to kind of juggle or deal with or figure out?
Yeah, that's a good question. The number one thing that I've heard no matter where I go is labor, getting, you know, enough staff to complete the jobs. You know, most crews figure it out over the course of the year. Everyone probably would like to have one more person, but it seems like, you know, labor is a huge issue just for maintenance side of things, just to get everything done. And so that's been an issue and will continue to be for the next several years, I'm sure. And so that's one. The other one is budgets that I hear a lot of times, you know, making sure, I mean, as products to maintain the golf course have gone up in cost, we need to make sure that budgets continue to be able to allow those superintendents to maintain the golf courses to the quality that's expected.
Adam, what about water? Water's critical, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Water's critical. You know, we've been lucky that we've avoided water restrictions for the most part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rains so far this spring have helped us, but you know, if you look around at the rivers, they're already pretty low. And so if you're on city water, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. We have a dry spring and into a dry summer, we don't see some water restrictions. And so that could be problematic as well.
Adam, you led me into my next question. I'm always curious about this, but I don't know that I've ever really asked you or anyone. Obviously here in the off season here in Iowa, you know, we're cold, where courses are closed down, we're getting snow. Is it critical, and it kind of goes back to probably every facility is maybe a little bit different, but like, is it the amount of snow that we get that's critical for golf courses? Is it more of kind of when we get it and how much going into the spring as far as from that moisture standpoint? Do courses want to have a lot of snow, or is it kind of just depends?
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, that we always struggle with every year. The biggest thing is we want to keep the crown or the growth point of that plant to have some sort of moisture and protect it from those cold winter winds. So
okay,
we like snow cover because that keeps the wind off of it, keeps moisture right at the crown. But it's okay to have some breaks because we don't want to have too much snow cover, because then we can get some diseases going underneath there. So we normally say if we have less than 90 days straight of snow cover, we're in good shape to not have to worry about the snow molds and some of the diseases that you see in other parts of the country. You know, light rains, things like that work just as well as snow. And so that keeps the crown hydrated as well. So that's really important. You know, a lot of the winter rains that we get, obviously the ground's frozen, so it just runs right off.
Sure.
So then we just have to have more frequent amounts of rain as far as that goes.
And then leading into spring, you know, are golf courses wanting kind of just that all day soaker? Is that kind of the what they're looking for going into the spring?
Yeah. That all day soaker is really good to kind of set them up for the season. You know, timely, a couple of those in the spring spread out would be the perfect world. But if we had that, then we wouldn't have anything to worry about, I guess. So
always hard to judge Mother Nature, isn't it?
That's right.
Adam, the last few years, what's been kind of the outlook for superintendents as far as dealing with weather, kind of dealing with that? Is it, it's been tough, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been really tough. You know, thinking back the last couple of years, last year we had pretty significant drought in parts of the state. Mm-hmm. And then leading into that, you know, the western portion of the state had very minimal snow cover. And so we saw some winter kill on some courses out to the western part of the state. And so that always makes things tough for them. And we're hoping that, you know, we get more moisture, more of a normal quote unquote spring this year with more moisture to help them kind of recover their soil moisture and get them back on track. The other unique thing, if you think about it back a couple of years ago, I guess it was 2 years now, was the fall armyworm outbreak that we had.
Right. Yeah.
And so that was kind of a new pest for us in the state. Kind of one of those that we don't very often see. My colleague that's been at Iowa State for over 40 years said he remembers one other occasion in the state where they had fall armyworm to the extent that we did that year. So that's always interesting. You know, there's always new issues that pop up, new battles that the superintendents face trying to maintain the course. And so that was just a unique curveball, I guess, that year.
Adam, can you talk about, there's probably people out there that are, maybe have driven by a course and, you know, they're like, boy, that course used to have a lot of trees. I wonder why they're taking out all these trees or they're marking them. What's going on there?
Yeah, there's several different things that are happening in the state. Obviously, on our ash trees, you've got the ash borer. And, you know, in the parts of the state where the derecho went through in 2020 that injured those trees and sped up the borer's progress on killing what would be healthy trees and really damaging those. The areas that I've noticed that the most, you know, is Des Moines and Ames. You didn't see a ton of damage from the ash borer until mm-hmm. after the derecho. And now, man, those trees have really gone downhill. And you can follow that across the state, you know, through Marshalltown over into Cedar Rapids. Mm-hmm. So that's one of them. There's also several different viruses and issues going on with oak trees in the state right now. And so you might be seeing that as well. And so, you know, what you think might be a healthy tree is probably affected by one of these issues going on, and they're just trying to get those out of the way, because once a tree dies, obviously it's a safety hazard, as limbs can just fall at any time.
Well, and I'm sure maybe you kind of can expand on this a little bit. You know, sometimes you have trees that are hurting the turf, as far as, you know, wind and just, you know, maybe it's got getting too much shade and that type of stuff in certain areas.
Yeah, we see that a lot as well, Clint. You know, as I visit different courses, you know, people will say, well, this hole's always struggled. And one of the things that you can tell is, you know, they planted trees 20 years ago and those trees right. have all grown up and matured and they just need to be thinned out a little bit. One, it's not healthy for the trees. They're fighting for resources from each other, but also, you know, it's the turf is suffering. It's not getting enough sunlight. It's not getting enough air movement. So diseases are setting in there and the roots are stealing some of the nutrients and water away as well. And so that's causes problems there for sure. But I'll tell you, there's not a more emotional issue on a golf course than when you suggest cutting down trees.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think people, you know, once they're kind of educated on what's going on, at least in my experience and at my club, once they kind of understand, oh, okay, well, here's why we're doing it. Oh, well, that'll help this hole or it'll help this green. It's like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. That's, you know, one of the things I do think, and people normally after you've kind of gotten over that initial shock of what it looks like, and you start to see the quality of the turf bounce back on those holes, they're like, man, that really plays good now. And so I think it's, you know, with time it heals it.
Adam, you talk about your visits. I want you to expand a little bit on that, you know, through the extension, and, you know, we help you with some of those visits the IGA does, and just talk to me kind of how those work, or maybe if someone's interested in having a visit, how they would go about that.
Yeah, the IGA is an awesome partner supporting, you know, my extension travels. So a lot of times what happens is the superintendent or, you know, the club will reach out to me and say, hey, we'd like to have you come out and visit our golf course. We've got some issues going on, and I'll set up a time to try to travel out to the golf course and actually look at the issues and try to set up some solutions for that golf course. And so that's, you know, normally everything from turf related to, again, we talk about, you know, too many trees in an area, got problems with diseases, things like that. So there's lots of things that we talk about, and it's a great opportunity. It's a great service that Iowa State Extension provides, and it's awesome that the IGA is a partner to help support me actually getting to visit the course. So,
Adam, you know, a lot of 9-hole courses in Iowa, you know, were built in, I think it was the 60s. Are there things with those courses with the, you know, the advancement of, you know, machinery and different chemicals and stuff that maybe people should be aware of, or maybe something they could look into as far as some of those courses that have been around for so long?
Yeah, there's, you know, one of the big things on those golf courses is the age of the trees, like we talked about earlier. You know, that they planted trees throughout the years, and those trees now are 30 some years old. So we're probably fighting shade issues on some of those holes. We also talk about, you know, hey, if we can increase the chemical budget or fertility, get an extra application. A lot of those courses are really lean on their fertility, especially on their fairways. So if we can fertilize the fairway, even one more application, that'll make a denser stand of turf, which limits some of the weeds and makes a better golfing experience.
A lot of different golf courses in Iowa, you know, doing a lot of different things. Can you just talk about kind of the different varieties that maybe of grasses that you see throughout the state? Because they're not all the same, are they?
Right. So you see, you know, the creeping bentgrass greens, and some golf courses that have a larger budget have fairways of creeping bentgrass. You know, and that's the very fine textured grass that's takes a lot of maintenance to maintain. It's funny, I get a lot of golfers that will email me and say, I want my golf or my yard to look be the same grass as a putting green. I'm going, no, I don't think you do. You don't want to be out there mowing it every day.
No. don't have that much time. Yeah.
Right. And so we have, you know, greens and fairways, tees with that throughout the state. And then we have some golf courses that have Kentucky bluegrass on their fairways. Many roughs are that way. Some have tall fescue, which is a little bit coarser grass. People are starting to be more interested in that. Takes a little bit less water, a little bit lower nitrogen requirement. On the flip side of it, it's not quite as cold hardy as Kentucky bluegrass. So there have been years where we've lost some Kentucky or some tall fescue to cold winters. And so be aware of that as you hear this podcast and get ideas going in your head. and then there's some courses that still use quite a bit of perennial ryegrass as well. And so again, that's that shiny grass, you know, that looks dark green, stripes up really nice. But again, it provides a nice playing surface as well. Those are kind of the biggies on the playing part of the course that we see.
Adam, in your experiences, and also maybe talking with your colleagues, like you mentioned too, what's some of the biggest changes or biggest, you know, differences in the way turf is handled, you know, today versus, you know, a while back?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost is the amount of fertilizer that's going out today versus, you know, 10, 15 years ago. We're way, way, way lower on rates of nitrogen. And we realize that, you know, we can run green speeds quicker with less nitrogen. We don't have to mow as often, obviously. And so that helps, especially when we're tight on labor. And that's better for the environment. You know, we're having less inputs there. So that's been a huge advancement. We're also better at, you know, equipment wise, we've got rollers now that we're regularly rolling greens. And so we can manage green speeds that way. And there's some disease impact with that as well. And so we can kind of limit dollar spot if we're regularly rolling greens. And that's a good thing too.
Adam, you know, always trying to get, you know, more and more, you know, students and kids involved in turf grass and horticulture. What's some advice you would give maybe a high school student or even middle school student that's maybe thinking about, you know, like you said, I want to do something outside. Maybe I want to do something with turf, golf courses, that type of thing. What's some good advice for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the good advice would be that, you know, try it out one summer, go volunteer or not volunteer, but go sign up at your local golf course and try to get on one of those crews to try to help. You know, one of the things that I talk to a lot of times are people that are older and they say, man, I wish I would have known about this career field younger in life. I sure would have enjoyed it. And I would agree, if you enjoy being around the game of golf and you enjoy, you know, working outside, man, there's not a better marriage as far as that goes for a career. And so it's a great opportunity. I love being on those golf course visits, the site visits when we get there, you know, early in the morning and get to drive the course. And even if the superintendent or the course isn't having its best day, it's still a beautiful place to be, and you can't beat it. So it's, you know, I'd say just try it out, see if you like it. I mean, worst case scenario is you spend 3 years or 3 months, you know, kind of mowing some grass and maybe something that you don't find out you don't like, but it's really a good, neat experience and great chance to test drive the career.
Well, and going back to, you know, one of the concerns you said, you know, is labor. So, you know, if a kid can find a crew that's, you know, looking for another set of hands, it's kind of a win-win situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, when I'm not on extension visits, I help with the turf program and the undergraduate education here. And I give the example of when I went through the turf program at Iowa State, we had 150 kids in it. Today we have 37. And so there's a lot less kids in the career path, but the students today, if you go out and do internships and do a good job, you've got a job offer or two waiting for you as a junior. Mm-hmm. And so all you have to do is finish up school and you can roll right into it. And there's not too many careers that you can say that there's a job waiting for you as a junior.
Right. Well, and I'll say too, I mean, there are so many great mentors around the state, regardless if you're from Burlington or Sioux City or Decorah, where Des Moines, wherever, there's so many golf course superintendents that want to share that knowledge and be a mentor to kind of that next generation, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. It's, you know, they're there to learn from, and it's awesome to see, you know, when I see my students talk about their mentors in the state and what they learn and the time that the superintendent takes with them, I think it's awesome opportunity.
Adam, you've been, you know, some different places around the country. What's some things that maybe people don't realize that are unique to Iowa? Obviously the weather's a little different than, you know, somewhere south, but, you know, is it, you know, the different types of varieties that courses have, or what's some things that set Iowa or maybe even the Midwest, but Iowa specifically, kind of apart from other parts of the country in regards to the golf courses?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the most unique is the wind, for sure. Okay. That affects, you know, obviously that falls into weather, but that affects so much of what a superintendent does, from water management to chemical applications, fertility. You know, it makes timing everything for them. And so that's definitely high on my radar. The other thing that I think is unique about Iowa is the fact that so many people understand fertilization and chemicals and things like that, just from, you know, the small nine holes that have people from the co-op that are in on the golf course boards. And so I think that's, that makes us unique too, that people understand what superintendents do. And so that's kind of always fun to go and talk to a greens committee and, you know, have most people in the room nodding their head, understanding what I'm saying, which is different than other parts of this country for sure.
Adam, I want to backtrack just a second. I wanted to hit on this. You know, you talked about, you know, putting chemicals down on a golf course and that type of thing. That's something that just not anybody can do, can they? They gotta go through some testing and some stuff like that. But then also, you know, they're good stewards of the land. They're not just putting it down and letting it run wherever it goes, are they? They're taking steps to making sure that it, you know, doesn't get into places it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, anyone that applies a chemical on a golf course in the state of Iowa has to be certified and tested through the state. They have to have continuing education to continue that license. And they're not just applying this at any time that they feel like is appropriate, mm-hmm. or, you know, whenever they feel like it. And I've mentioned chemicals several times. I also want to point out that, you know, a lot of the golf courses in the state have taken acres out of maintenance, let them grow up. There's been a lot of efforts to establish areas on the golf courses for monarchs. And there's a lot of areas in roughs that now have monarch habitat or other pollinator habitat. And so that's been interesting to see that shift as well across the state when I go to visit golf courses.
Adam, before we let you go, you know, spring's almost here. This winter, has it been a good winter? We talked about the snow earlier and moisture stuff. Has it been a good winter so far for golf courses heading into the spring?
Yeah, I think, you know, so far we've had moisture when we've needed it. You know, we were dry going into the fall, but we caught some moisture at critical times. And we had some snow cover for a period, but not too long. And, you know, this last week we've had some rain throughout the state and more significant rain the last couple of days. So, so far I think we're on to a good path, you know, that we've had good moisture for the most part across the state, that grass should be coming out of winter fairly decent.
Awesome. Well, we'll hope that continues. Like you said, we got some rain the last couple of days and hopefully that goes to benefit everybody out there in the state of Iowa. Dr. Tomes, I want to thank you again for coming on the podcast and enlighten our listeners a little bit on the turf side of things. And we'll see you down the road.
Sounds good, Clint. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. See ya.